Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Rekhard Faber.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 122 for the weekend starting 21 February 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like Tokoloshe blamed for data center collapse.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about signal jamming in Parliament. What else?
Also talk about Cell C still gaining in prepaid and a big restructure at Telkom.
Plus, GCHQ breaking into Gemalto systems and possibly breaking the whole mobile system, and fiber broadband coming to more suburbs in Johannesburg.
Before we get to that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Oh, welcome to the show. How's it, Rafat?
How's it, Duncan?
Nice hot afternoon to record a show.
Yeah, beautiful in Joburg.
As always.
Beautiful.
Lots to talk about. Where should we start? I guess signal jamming was the big tech story this week.
And
it's been running for over a week now, in fact, since the State of the Nation address last Thursday, when journalists walked into Parliament and discovered that there was no cell phone signal. And sitting right in next to the seats in the press gallery was a very suspicious looking device, which turned out to be a signal jammer put there by the state security agency after plenty of denials and lots of people not professing not to know what was going on.
Did you say it was situated in the gallery next to the press area?
Apparently, it was right next to the press's seating. So it was. I think that makes it quite clear as to where this thing was aimed at. But it's turned into quite a farce actually over the last week. The latest developments actually just announced this afternoon, Friday afternoon as we record this, that Zuma has promised that there will never in future be any signal jamming in Parliament. We had the Minister of State Security yesterday coming up with various excuses for why this thing was there, including suggesting that Parliament could come under attack from drones, of course, be quickly pointed out that drones don't operate on the same frequencies as mobile at all.
Yeah, it's a bit. It's obviously somebody tried to do something and it hit right back at them. There's no reason for that thing to be there. A cell phone jammer in Parliament. No. Let's be honest. And even if they say it'll never happen again, it should never have happened in the first place. Let's be honest. I mean, these things also are such high end, high grade military equipment. You know, they don't just hang around. You don't just buy one at the corner store and switch it on. The order to switch that thing on must have come from a few levels up in the ranks.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, this equipment is potentially illegal. I say potentially because there are some exceptions. But ICASA was very quick, actually, to put out a statement after the news broke that there was a signal jammer being used in Parliament to say that it has not authorized the use of such equipment in South Africa, and it would appear, in fact, that the use of such equipment is unlawful. But ICASA did point out in its statement that the security cluster in government, state security, for example, I would imagine, is exempt from this ruling. So there is a possibility that it wasn't unlawful. But it certainly sent the wrong message, and it certainly wasn't good for PR at all. I have my doubts that Zuma or the high-ups in the ANC actually knew about it. I suspect that this was something that was done by the State Security Agency, probably with the blessing of the Minister of State Security. You know, a few other people may have been informed, but I don't think this was directed from the top. I don't think this was a case of Zuma sitting in the Union Building saying, oh, we better block signals in Parliament of whatever reason. And what was the thinking behind it in the first place? I mean, there was a lot of extra security around the State of the Union or State of the Nation address this year. And it was all to do with the EFF and threats of destruction what Julius Malema had been saying. And this was all directed at the EFF. And we saw plainclothes policemen come into Parliament and forcibly remove the EFF after they interrupted Zuma's speech. We then saw the DA walk out of Parliament as well in protest at police actually coming into the. Into Parliament. Parliament is supposed to be a sacrosanct place, independent of the executive, and here was the executive sending in the armed police to remove MPs. All very dramatic and concerning. But I think that this signal jammer must have somehow played a role in this. Were they worried that the EFF MPs or other MPs were going to use their mobile devices to communicate, to plot disruption inside Parliament? Were they worried about the Julius talking to Floyd and saying, "Oh, okay, in 15 minutes, into the speech, you're going to get up and say this"? Well, actually, no. You know, were they worried about that sort of communication, or was this an attempt to censor the press, which seems to me to be a little less likely?
Yeah, I agree.
Or maybe it wasn't. You know, maybe we've seen Parliament block its own live feed in the past.
Well, they also did that on the day on the Sona. Remember when they
focused only on the speaker. When the ejections were going on. So perhaps what they were trying to do was prevent cell phones from taking live video footage and sending it out of Parliament as it was happening.
It's short-sighted because people are still going to be able to record. Let's be honest. Regardless.
Yeah.
It's not really a very effective way of trying to censor anybody.
Yeah.
And it's also, let's not forget, I mean, for this to be accidentally left switched on, I think, you know, these signal jammers aren't toys with a big on-off switch. You know, there's certainly more to it to get this thing running.
Is there I mean, this thing looked like a briefcase that you could simply unplug, but I've never actually physically seen one of these things. It looked pretty advanced. Certainly didn't look like a cheap piece of technology.
I found the website for this company online as well. I'm just trying to find the link. That's what it looks like. It looks like a hard, ruggedized suitcase with 4 or 5 antennas protruding from the top. Now, those are obviously the antennas that jam the signal.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, you open up the suitcase, and then you have all these switches and knobs and things. But again, you know, this is not the kind of thing. It's not like yourself when you forget to take off airplane mode or forget to put on your airplane mode, right?
It's something you specifically install to do a job. Yeah, I don't buy that was an accident, or the fact that they blame glitches, which is just nonsense.
Yeah,
someone put the thing there and switched it on with the intention of blocking signals, and the intention was not to block drones from attacking the. I mean, what a ludicrous story! I mean, what drones? What?
Yeah, no. When I heard that, I also realized, you know, it's not that it's a silly argument. It's a silly reasoning.
Especially since they don't use the same signals. Maybe a drone jammer, if there is such a thing.
But also, for that to be effective, that thing needs to really be placed on top of the building or line of sight outside, at least, not inside a building where it's clearly intended to disrupt signals from inside the building.
Yeah. Anyway, there's been a lot of bluster around this and. A lot of nonsense, I think, as people have scrambled to sort of backtrack and all the rest of it, and you know, they're already blaming juniors in the State Security Agency and all the rest of it. So I think we're going to see scapegoats rather than any real action getting taken over what happened here. But we'll get back to this in our winner and loser section. I'm sure it's easy to guess which of those particular categories we're going to be picking someone in this week. Anyway, we'll come back to that a bit later. What else is happening this week? Interesting. I went to Blue Label Telecom's interim results presentation this week.
Oh yeah.
And always interesting because they always throw up a slide there which shows the relative market share of the various operators in the prepaid space. Now, Blue Label is by far South Africa's biggest. Reseller, if you like, or biggest agent for prepaid airtime in the country. They represent all of the operators, and according to them anyway, according to the co-CEO, Brett Deevy, their numbers provide a pretty accurate insight into what's happening in the prepaid market in South Africa, prepaid mobile market in South Africa. And over the last while, we've seen the steady trend away from MTN and towards Cell C. Now, we saw MTN start to fight back in the middle of last year with with the cut in their prepaid, with their headline prepaid rate to 79¢ a minute. And I would have thought that that would have stalled this flow of traffic away from MTN towards Cell C. Mm. But if you look at the latest numbers from Blue Label, it suggests that that isn't actually happening. Although Brett Levy says that that there was some slowdown in it when the new packages were introduced. But there's still been a move away from MTN over the period. We're looking at here from May to November last year. The numbers they're looking at are in the period June to November 2014, which coincides with the first 6 months of Blue Label's 2015 financial year. Cell C's rand value of outgoing prepaid airtime sales climbed to 21% of the total from 17% in the same period in 2013. So that's a 4 percentage point movement, which is huge.
Yeah.
MTN, on the other hand, lost significant ground over the same period. At least in the Blue Label universe, falling from 32% in the second half of calendar 2013 to 27% in the second half of 2014. So most of that flow has been between MTN and from MTN to Cell C. Telkom has also picked up market share, but off a very small base. They've gone from 1% of the market to 2% of the market by rand value in prepaid in Blue Label's universe.
Yeah.
And Vodacom, interestingly, has remained static right through this whole period at 50%. They own exactly half the market, and that's where they've stayed. So interesting times. Brett Levy specifically said that it's very difficult to tell where this market is going to go this year, whether Cell C is going to continue gaining or whether MTN is going to gain some market share back. But he says what we can be sure of is that there is going to be change in the market before the end of this year, and that change might surprise us. We might not see the same sort of trends that we've seen in the past continuing through 2015.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting the way the markets are moving. But yeah, I guess it's always between the prepaid market and the postpaid, and... Yeah, we'll see how it turns out.
I'm interested in the Cell C number. I mean, particularly given all the complaints you hear about the quality of Cell C's network, particularly here in Gauteng. I know a lot of people I don't know a lot of people on Cell C, but of the people I know on Cell C, almost all of them bitch and moan about the quality Cell C's network here in Johannesburg.
I've also got a few friends that's constantly complaining about that. But I have to say also, some suburbs that I've been through recently, MTN also hasn't been performing as well as what it has traditionally.
MTN's had some problems in the last few weeks, actually. I use an AfriHost somewhere through MTN, and I've had problems connecting. In some places, it says I have a full signal, and I just can't get a connection.
Maybe somebody's driving around with a signal jammer. You never know.
Yeah, no, I wasn't working in Parliament this week. interesting numbers, and I think interesting times. Cell C is in an interesting position. People suggest that it's in quite a tenuous position in this market. I think it's a view I tend to subscribe to. They're sitting on a massive pile of debt. There was a report in Bloomberg this week, suggesting that that Cell C's parent company, Ogier Telecom, may be shopping it around, looking for a possible buyer. There was some rumor, I don't believe it, that Telkom is still interested in buying Cell C. I can't see that happening. I can't see a local deal happening either, as Bloomberg was suggesting. I just don't think Vodacom or MTN would be allowed to buy Cell C. The regulators would block that. So the only deal I could see happening is if a big international player, maybe someone like Bharti Airtel or Orange or some other company that hasn't been mentioned in reference to Cell C previously, comes in and makes a deal. But I think that balance sheet of Cell C, a huge amount of debt that they're sitting on, is going to prove to be a really real barrier to actually doing a deal. I think before a deal happens, quite possibly the shareholders are going to have to do some sort of debt for equity swap or something to reduce that net debt before they can interest a third party in possibly acquiring the company. But interesting times. I think we're definitely going to see some movement on Cell C this year.
But Cell C, I mean, it hasn't really, really been flexible in the last few months, at least in terms of what it's able to do with its pricing.
It hasn't changed the consumer. In fact, its pricing has gone up. If anything, it's certainly in data and out of bundle data charges and that sort of thing. We've seen a price movement in the upward direction, which is kind of contrary to what this previous CEO, Alan Knott-Craig, was doing. It almost feels to me as if the excitement has gone out of Cell C. Over the last few years, we've had, you had Lars Reichelt building the 3G network. He was quite a character, and he was almost a bit like John Legere, the guy who runs T-Mobile in the US. He would really press all the buttons of the bigger operators and get them to squirm a bit. You know, even if Celsi was taking on these Goliaths, they were having fun about it, and it made it a fun company. And then I think under Alan, not Craig, they really got serious. And I think some of that impetus has gone out of the company.
I think you hit the nail on the head. So Celsi certainly used to, it was a different company back in the day, and we still had just this strong drive, I think, to be this alternative player. But now that I think it has to fall in line with, you know, to play this big game,
if they do just become another player, and they sort of need two other products, and perhaps just, you know, offer whatever the other operators offer at a lower price. In fact, they can't offer what the other operators offer because they don't seem to have the money to do it. I mean, then their Gauteng network bears testimony to that fact, and they also haven't launched an LTE network. They're the only operator that doesn't have an LTE network in South Africa. You know, can they just be the smaller player that competes on price? Or do they need to be something bigger, as not Craig always used to seem to think they needed 25% market share?
But I guess also, if you look at a lot of the deals that some of the other mobile operators have, it's keeping people on their network. So if you get discounts for phoning other people on your network, that to me seems like a very popular race, but Celsi will lose out every time simply because it doesn't have that strong user base to begin with.
Yeah, and that's, Vodacom knows that. I mean, that's why you have these calling plans where you pay R3 and get an hour's call or whatever on Vodacom. It's in some ways, it could be seen as anti-competitive. Celsi certainly sees it as anti-competitive. But they're in an interesting position. I look forward to seeing what Celsi gets up to this year, whether it's a sale or whether they come back to the market aggressively. They've got to do something. They can't just sit there and do nothing. I think the shareholders either have to find a buyer or they have to inject yet more money into this company.
And I'm sure that
their appetite's wearing thin.
Well, we'll have to see.
Anyway, let's move on. Before we go international, I think the other local story I wanted to chat about this week is actually a story that came out today. Probably doesn't need us to talk in any sort of detail about it, but Vumatel, the company that we've been following with quite some interest over the last year for being a pioneer in the home fiber market, has announced that they're expanding into two new suburbs. Unfortunately, they're not the ones either of us live in.
Sadly.
They're expanding into, and I think it's a no-brainer, expanding into Kilani and Riviera in Johannesburg. If Joburg residents will know that these are areas with high-rise apartment blocks, and therefore the cost to deployment, the cost per point is going to be lower if you're running fiber into buildings, higher density areas. So I'm surprised that it's actually taken this long for one of these guys to actually start to target Kilani and Riviera. But if you live in one of those blocks of flats, you've got reason to smile. The value of your property is going to go up.
Congratulations. Yeah, we're all envious.
It'll get here eventually.
Yeah, I've heard some comments just on the topic of fiber. There's been some interesting comments coming out of Parkhurst, users who's on fiber, and it seems like they're having a very good time with their super fast broadband.
They've probably downloaded the internet.
I'll stream all the HD video you can eat.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, the last story I wanted to chat about was actually something that broke yesterday on the website started by Glenn Greenwald, the journalist who broke some of the stories, the bulk of the stories, I'd say, around the NSA and GCHQ with Edward Snowden. And this is a piece that I think is hugely concerning, although it hasn't got much publicity or much press since it was published. I'm just going to read here. It's published by a website called The Intercept. If you want to read the original piece, just Google The Intercept and you'll find it on their homepage. But it says American and British spies hacked into the internal computer network of the largest manufacturer of SIM cards in the world, stealing encryption keys used to protect the privacy of cell phone communications across the globe, according to top secret documents provided to The Intercept by National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden. The hack was perpetrated by a joint unit consisting of operatives of the NSA and its British counterpart, GCHQ. The breach, detailed in a secret 2010 GCHQ document, gave the surveillance agencies the potential to secretly monitor a large portion of the world's cellular communications, including both voice and data. The company targeted by the intelligence agencies, Gemalto, is a multinational firm incorporated in the Netherlands that makes the chips used in mobile phones and next-generation credit cards. Mobile operators around the world use their technology, including here in South Africa. Gemalto produces some 2 billion SIM cards a year. with the stolen encryption key, intelligence agencies can monitor mobile communications without seeking or receiving approval from telecoms companies and foreign governments. Possessing the keys also sidesteps the need to get a warrant or a wiretap while leaving no trace on the wireless provider's network that the communications were intercepted. Bulk key theft additionally enables the intelligence agencies to unlock any previously encrypted communications they had already intercepted but did not yet have the ability to decrypt.
That is very, very scary stuff.
This is unbelievable.
I mean, it's essentially hacking the mainframe to the matrix and changing the world, because that is what... I mean, if you do it at the source, right,
yeah.
you really you can mess it up for a lot of people, and then this is what's happened, yeah.
I'm looking forward to a response from Gibraltar, and they're going to have to put out a detailed rebuttal or answer to what's happened here. But basically, it looks like GCHQ has broken the mobile industry.
Yeah, I mean, how do you go back from this? If these keys are out there, it's not something you can just change the algorithm to. I mean, these things are hard-coded.
Yeah. Well, they're not out there technically. I mean, you know, it'd be a massive concern if this stuff was actually out there in the public domain, but they're held by these intelligence agencies.
For sure, but still.
They could leak. Yeah. I mean, you know, what happens then? You know, this entire industry is built on this encryption standard. You know, and if it's compromised, what does it mean? I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on these subjects, and perhaps we need to get an expert on the subject on the show, and maybe perhaps even next week, perhaps we'll have a call around and see if we can get someone who knows more about this stuff. But it sounds to me very concerning. I mean, can Gibraltar simply make amendments to the standard, to the technology? Would that help? Can they issue new encryption keys? Would that help? You know, how do they prevent GCHQ and other and the NSA, for that matter, from doing this in future?
What's also quite scary,
I don't know the answer to those questions. I'd love to know them.
No, I agree. What's worrying to me, though, too, is, I mean, if you look at the weak point here, I mean, all these SIM cards are not vulnerable out in the world, but they're vulnerable in this one place where they get manufactured. And if the utmost care isn't taken to protect the company that produces these things, I mean, I think this is going to potentially set a trend for a lot of other breaches we'll see in the future. I mean, it's just easier to hack one, you know, to hack the mainframe, so to speak, or the birthplace of these technologies, rather than trying to go out into the world and individually try and get into these cards.
Anyway, we might try and get an expert on the subject on the show next week. I'm also a big fan of on the Twit Network, which is Leo Laporte's podcast network.
Oh, yes,
their Security Now show is very good, and I'm sure they're going to tackle this issue this week, so I'm going to have a listen to that, and I recommend anyone who doesn't know the Security Now podcast to tune in and listen to that. It's very good. Anyway, I think let's move on to our regular features of the week then, Rechot. Let's do our winner and loser first. I want to chat about our winner. It's Alan Knott Craig, not the one we were speaking about earlier in the show, but his son, of the same name, formerly the CEO of iBurst and of Mixit. And he's doing some really cool stuff with free Wi-Fi. I had a catch-up session with him in Rosebank yesterday, Thursday. You know, he's done some pretty amazing stuff in Pretoria with the city of Tshwane. It's the first time I've actually spent time talking to him about what exactly they're doing through the project Isizwe non-profit. And it's pretty cool stuff. They've rolled out 500 access points so far across the city of Tshwane, mainly in townships and underserviced areas. And they're providing 250 megs a day free Wi-Fi access. That equates to about 7.5 gigabytes of data a month per device. And they're hoping to expand that massively over the next few years and actually provide blanket coverage across the whole of the city of Pretoria in the coming years. And he now wants to replicate that project in other municipalities and metros around the country. So he's doing really interesting stuff. And you know, I think that the model is working well. Go have a look at the piece we published on Tech Central today. But you know, he's talking about getting the cost of the cost of delivering data down to 15 cents per gigabyte.
Wow, that's impressive.
At that sort of level, he says, you know, it makes sense for governments to actually subsidize and provide free access to the citizens, up to obviously a certain quota per month. They're also providing free access to things like Wikipedia, the national curriculum, and interestingly to Gumtree, which is the biggest website for sort of low to medium income jobs in South Africa. And yeah, it's working well. They've also got a little video project on the ground, a sort of Wi-Fi TV project, which we've reported on as well, but I've got some more detail on exactly how it works. They basically have taken 10 unemployed youngsters from the townships around Pretoria and turned them into almost like citizen journalists. They've got video cameras on the ground. They shoot video, and they put together these little packages, which they then upload upload via the Wi-Fi network to Red Pepper Studios in London, and they package it and put it online. And then this is zero rated as well. And they put out a video, for example, the other day about taxi fares and the fact that the price of petrol has fallen dramatically, something like 30 or 40% in the last few months. Yet the price of the cost of a taxi fare has not come down along those lines. In fact, they haven't come down at all. And there was an interview they did with a taxi driver, and they were asking him, you know, these prices haven't come down, why aren't they going to come down, etc. And they packaged a video on this, and they put it online, and it had over 100,000 views in 4 days.
Wow, that's impressive.
And this is just on their Wi-Fi network.
But what a great idea to incorporate something like a video platform to be able to tell these stories on a platform like that, and giving them free access, giving users free access to that.
This is hyper local news, for the area, and it's an interesting media model actually.
Oh, very much.
And it's given employment to these 10 youngsters who might otherwise not be employed, and given them experience basic experience in journalism, I suppose.
And did he talk much about how the infrastructure that they've got rolled out? I mean, how it's been, how does it work under, or how well has it been performing under strain when a lot of people use it?
I didn't go into a lot of detail with him about that, but he says the average speed you're getting on the network is around 7 megabits a second.
Which is actually sufficient for most use.
Yeah, no, indeed.
For a smartphone, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's what you'd get on a 3G network, if you're lucky. The sites are all connected, or most of them are connected via a microwave backhaul. They connect to a high site in Fairy Glen, apparently called The Castle. I don't live in Pretoria or know Pretoria very well, but I'm led to believe that if you live in Pretoria, you'll know The Castle quite well. It's in a suburb called Fairy Glen, and it's a high site in Pretoria, apparently, for telecommunications. All the backhaul is from the various hotspots is sent to this site via microwave, and then it's connected onto the internet via onto the backhaul network through Neotel's network on Neotel's fiber, which they've provided a big discount for, apparently, mainly because they're going into areas where Neotel wouldn't compete anyway. We're talking about places like Atteridgeville and Mamelodi and Kharankua.
So it's also, they're not really talking places with a fiber layout where that could benefit them potentially.
Not yet. They're going off to the underserviced areas first, but I think over time they want to expand this network to cover the whole of Pretoria.
Yeah.
I presume that, you know, they're not going to provide free Wi-Fi in areas where
in Parkhurst,
they won't. Companies like Mickle Neuk or whatever these fancy, I don't know if the fancy Pretoria suburbs are. What's that one in the west that you drive past on your way through to the Department of Communications? I forget. Not Linwood, that area around there. I've no doubt that they've got no intention of providing free Wi-Fi there because it's not needed.
Yeah,
people
sure.
can afford in those areas can afford 3G and 4G access, or they have access to Telkom and their own Wi-Fi at home. So, but interesting stuff. So, well done to Alan, not Craig. He's really seems to be turning this project he sees way into success, and let's hope it expands into other parts of the country and gets internet into the hands of people who can't otherwise afford it.
Oh yeah.
And some point he made to me is, you know, why do we need these big broadband plans in South Africa, like what Zuma announced in the State of the Nation address last week? You know, Telkom will be the lead agency in deploying broadband infrastructure. He says, you know, get guys on the ground, small teams, Wi-Fi guys doing Wi-Fi to do this stuff. You can do it much cheaper than any telco could ever do it.
Oh yeah, and probably much more efficiently too, if it's nodes that you roll out rather than big road infrastructures.
Exactly. So anyway, well done to him. He's doing some good stuff. Our loser this week, and we hinted at it earlier, and it's not Jacob Zuma actually. Our loser this week is the Minister of State Security, David Mahlobo, for his interesting press conference after the State of the Nation, in which he blamed drones, amongst other things, for the reason for blocking signals in Parliament when it was clear that it was nothing to do with drones at all.
Yeah.
So David Mahlobo, you are our loser of the week. And our last feature, of course, is our pick. What picks have you got?
Picks and favorites. So I've been doing a lot of design work recently again, and one of the things I need to do is do measurements on screen of various either of a screenshot or of an existing web page or graphic. And there's a handy little app that I found for my Mac that does a superb job of on-screen measurement. It's called Pixel Stick. And once you install and run it, it actually draws a series of circles and lines on your screen. So I'm able to track various points based on where my design is, or if I want to measure certain parts of a website. And it gives me accurate measurements as well. Now, if you're a designer, you'd understand, you know, getting the pixel measurement right if you're trying to fit graphics into some place on a web page. But Pixel Stick is a very handy little tool. It's free, and it's on macOS, and there's a lot of advanced features too that allow you to really get the best out of storing and maintaining measurements of various parts of graphic design or on-screen work. That's Pixel Stick. Quite a cool little tool.
Great, looks pretty cool. Go check it out, Pixel Stick. My pick this week is an app for iOS and Android. It's pretty cool. I think I'm going to get bored with it quite quickly, but it's worth the install just to play with it for a few days. It's called, I think it's pronounced Scene, but I'm not sure. S-E-E-N-E. It's kind of like an Instagram for 3D images. You take a picture with your phone in a certain way, and it transforms it into like a 3D image. It's very difficult to get right. I've tried taking various pictures of my bulldogs, and I haven't quite got it right. Gets these weird effects on it, but it's like Instagram, so you can check out the pictures that other people have taken, and they actually look pretty cool. You get some really good effects if you know what you're doing, which I clearly don't. For example, have a look at that image there. You just tilt the phone slightly, and you get this really interesting 3D effect.
Ideally, you'll need your subject to be very still and not moving, and get almost a head-on depth of field shot.
Exactly.
But that looks amazing. It could really turn an interesting or boring photograph into something interesting.
It does. Yeah, it really does add a depth to the images. I'm not sure they always work, but
some of them look a bit
funny.
But how do you actually then record it? Do you actually move the camera? So you record and then move the camera around to get that other angle?
Let's take one. Let's take one over the microphone that we're using here to take the picture. You just point your phone at it and press click, and then it...
Oh, it's got data points that
it's got data
records,
points that you kind of move around. You kind of move it to the left and right, or up and down, and it then picks up those data points and then uses those to create a 3D effect. Yeah, that one actually works quite well. I've just taken one over the microphone on the
desk.
Yeah,
that's actually cool.
And it actually looks pretty good. Get a bit of ghosting effect on the edge of the microphone, but it's a fun app to play with. You'll probably uninstall it again after a week, but it's worth a look. It's Scene, S-E-E-N-E, and it's available on the App Store and in Google Play.
I'm definitely going to grab that for the weekend.
Excellent. Speaking of weekend, I think it's time for it to start.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for popping in, Rechot. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. Or we can leave a comment after the post. Until next time, take care. Ciao.
Ciao.